like this is in local universe, so will be a bit huge range of metallicity. So this work is being carried out with a collaboration with these people. Okay, so I work with a collaboration with the people both in Kiel. So Rafael is previously my PhD supervisor, and all these Geneva people who helped me in running this stellar evolution code, and plus Paul and Olishner, which is provide me the observation data for the very massive star, and also Dan and Alexander Higa, which they contribute in terms of to do the explosion of this very massive star models. Okay, so this is so before I start my talk, the organizer asked me to give some brief introduction where I came from. Okay, so well, I'm from Malaysia. Obviously, this is where we are now in Kuala Lumpur. So this is only, if you're taking a flight, it's only 1.5 hours from Malaysia to Ho Chi Minh and another 30 minutes to come to here. So I don't have any jet lag like the rest of you. So I'm fine. So, okay, so my university is University of Malaya, which is technically the oldest university in Malaysia. Previously it was located in Singapore. After Singapore separated to Malaysia, the University of Malaya in Singapore become the NUS, National University of Singapore, and this UM is moved back to Kuala Lumpur, which is the center of Kuala Lumpur. And we start in 1960s something, I think. So this is where our university is, and this is my Department of Physics. I located at Department of Physics. Okay, so here is I managed to grab from the Google Earth. Okay, so some brief introduction what we do in UM. So technically we have in my department 37 academic staff altogether. We most of them are permanent staff. We don't have a postdoc technically. So and 4 of them doing research in astrophysics. Okay, so there's 1 professor. This professor is actually my previous supervisor too. Okay, and 1 AP and 2 senior lecturer. So I'm here. Okay, so I'm one of the 2 senior lecturer, and so 2 of us here is doing research in stellar evolution. 1 is in radio astronomy, and another 1 is in optical astronomy. So for stellar evolution, obviously in my field, I do massive star and very massive star research, and for those who are doing radio astronomy, they are focused on evolution of galaxy using H1 NCO tracer and solar physics and so on. I have no details what they do. And for the optical astronomy, they do a lot of Islamic astronomy using small telescope, because in a Muslim country, we observe new moon every month. Yeah? Okay, so back to research. Okay, so this is the question that we want to ask when we want to evolve a very massive star. So how massive star can be, right? So first of all, we want to ask, does this very massive star exist? What are definition of very massive star, which is massive, the star have mass larger than 100 solar mass. Okay. So so the star formation shows that it is difficult to form a star even greater than 30 solar mass. Okay, but for the stellar evolution, of course, we can evolve until 1,000 of solar mass. But depending on the radiation pressure and mass loss that we have to take into account when we're calculating these stellar evolution models. Okay, another thing that we want to answer is, can we see them? Okay, so in the previous research figure, for example, and Crowder have observed this young cluster, massive cluster, to see whether this kind of star exists, and it does. Okay, so one have been figure, for example, have assessed stars in this Arches cluster, where it found some upper limit around 150 solar mass. Okay, and another one is from Paul Crowder, where he reassessed the star cluster in NGC 3603 and R136, where they found that there is a mass which is around 320 solar mass star, which is in this R136. Okay, so This is one of this, what they call it, result that obtained in this paper. Okay, so this is one example of how they compare with the observation result. So this is I've taken from this paper. Okay, so this is where they what they call it, this observation result, they compare with the modeling that we have calculated earlier. So this is, I just want to show you example how we want to see all this system comparison theoretical plus with the observation. Okay, so from the textbook we have learned that what are relationship between mass versus luminosity. Okay, so from there we know that we have this one. This luminosity is proportional with m power of 3 for all range of mass. But for the very massive star, this is the one that I calculated, we found that for the VMS, it's flattened a bit due to the relative pressure relative to the gas pressure in the star. So what happened is we found that our what they call relationship is become m is power around 1.3 instead of 3. Okay, so this is a stellar evolution grid, has been calculated beautifully by this Sylvia Estrom in 2012. So my work is actually an extension of this work. Okay, so Sylvia had calculated from what they call it, a mass of star from 0.8 up to 120. This is for the solar matrix model, both rotation and non-rotation, where here we scale our solar using this heavy metal, using the Asplund 2005, where we get a bit less than the normal scaling that using the previous abundances. Okay, so for this calculation, we also consider rotation, where we get we take some what they call it ratio v over v critical around 0.4 as the initial starting, and then we evolve the star from ZAMS until what they call it at least end of carbon burning for my model. Okay, so for, but this one is, they calculated, I think, up to the silicon burning phase. So the extension will be up here. Okay, so we use the similar physics, what they call input, similar code, and so on, in order to reproduce our stellar evolution models. Okay, so, oops, sorry. Okay, so this is the evolution of very massive star. So I compare to see that how does this our core, convective core, compare to this low mass star, not really low mass star, it's lower mass sibling so-called. So right, this is for 25 solar mass. This is calculated by Hershey. So here we can see that for very massive star, the convective core, what they call it, dominates the, what they call it, entire what they call Kaplan diagram here. You can see most of this hydrogen burning phase is taking up around 90% of the lifetime of the star. So very massive star compared to massive star, they have much, much shorter lifetime and they will die eventually much earlier. So here, the key the key ingredient in calculating very massive star is mass loss, very obviously. Okay, so here I compare several. Hold on. It moves a bit faster. Okay, so here I compare several convective core for different type of models. So this is this one is for 150 solar mass with a solar metallicity. This is with rotation, and this is without rotation. You can see that how different, although what they call it, rotation do have some what they call it effect. For example, it have much higher lifetime compared to this their non-rotating counterpart. But you can see it technically a bit, the evolution is quite homogeneous, although what they call it, the value, the mass loss is dominate more than the rotation effect itself. Okay, so you can see for, if you go to the low metallicity, for example, the SMC, this effect is rotation is a bit, it don't really have an effect. So, but here also the mass loss doesn't give, you don't have any what they call it, a huge effect on the mass loss, so the mass can retain as much as possible in its core. Okay, so here is the largest, what they call it, star that we calculated, which is 500 solar mass with rotation. You can see that it has a very strong mass loss here, where at the main sequence itself, you can see it drop up to 90% from this original mass due to this mass loss. Okay, so one thing that was to consider, we can see that most of the star at the beginning of the life is start as an O star. Okay, so after few lifetime, I mean around, for example, 2 mega years, what happened is the star the hydrogen content at the surface will totally be depleted, and it will enter as a Wolf Rayet star. Okay, and they have several phase here according to the mass fraction that we calculated, and see that they have a very strong impact when they enter this Wolf Rayet phase. Okay, so here is actually the HRD diagram showing how this very massive star evolved. Okay, so you can see at the beginning, also this is for the solar metallicity and this is for the LMC. So you can see at the beginning itself, the star have extremely high luminosity, which is millions of, you can see here, it's already like about 7.1 here. So for both for rotating and non-rotating, but you can see the effect is it's still evolve here. It doesn't move much to the left to the right, or it will still stay as hot as possible, and eventually will have still extremely high mass loss. High temperature, and also high luminosity. When it's die. So here is the evolution of mass loss for this very massive star. So one thing I want to point out, this mass loss, we are not using dependent on the gamma yet for this one. Okay, so it's purely depend on the Z value. So we use several mass loss prescription by Yorick 2001, Nugis and Lama, and also Graffo and Hamann 2008, depending on how the range of effective temperature and luminosity change the range. So it depends on which the star evolved to which part, and it will change the mass loss eventually. Okay, so from here you can see at, for example, here we have extreme, here we have a very high peak here. So this is where where it entered the Wolf Rayet phase, where eventually we have extremely high mass loss, and also it also, like this one is for non-rotating model, they enter some bistability limit at one point. This is where we can see a huge mass loss will occur during the evolution. So here we also compare, so this is we do post-processing of the evolution. We want to compare, since we do not consider the this gamma Eddington for the evolution in the code itself. So we extract what are the gamma value at the different stage of the evolution. Okay, so here first we see what are the value at for the ZAM. This is we taking range from the lower mass star up to 500. The lower mass star is taken from the grid of Sylvia, and we extend to the 500, the one that my work. Okay, so from here we can see that at when we go to the higher initial mass, obviously we have a high gamma Eddington, but obviously it won't reach until 1. The highest, if I'm not mistaken, is around 0.7. Okay, so. Okay, so here is also the evolution of gamma Eddington, which is until times to core collapse. So obviously this gamma is have to depend, since it's proportional with kappa luminosity with mass. So if we have higher luminosity and less mass due to the mass loss, and also the difference is temperature. Effect temperature, which affect the gamma, we have a very high Eddington limit. Okay, so here is actually we map what are the what they call it very massive star according to this position of riot observed by Hammond. This is I just want to show this is the low mass star grid where this is where it we put here for the extension of the very massive star models. We map with all this Wolf Riot observation observed by Hammond and Sanders, and we see it mesh perfectly with the model that we calculated. Okay, so what are going to do with the fate of VMS? What it will die for? So one of the important point is people, because very massive star previously always considered in the point of view of population 3, people always say it will end up as a pair instability supernova. So this is how much the core of helium burning, helium core, will retain in order for you to produce this explosion. Okay, so this is a very nice figure by Higer, where it mapped the initial solar mass with this metallicity and see that we are fall in this range here. Okay, so from here we can see that more than 100 solar mass is predicted to become pulse position supernova, which eventually either will end up as a black hole. Okay, so here is the predicted of the VMS calculated from these models. So from here we can see that if we have a very a low metallicity, for example SMC, we predict that it can explode as pair instability supernova. Okay, towards the end, but others it might just collapse as a core collapse supernova and eventually die as a black hole. Okay, so I reach to my summary. Okay, so here I can see that what I can see, this VMS possesses a very large convective core during the main sequence itself. So and it evolved almost homogeneously. And you can see that the most VMS stay in the blue region and it doesn't become an LIV. Okay, and we all this very massive star enter the Wolf-Rayet phase with this sequence, become O star, then WNE, WNL, and so on. It become with WC and WO. This is the phase that we summarize. And finally, due to this mass loss, we find that in a different initial mass, eventually we'll end up with a similar mass because of the mass loss increase with mass. Okay, thank you.
Hi. Okay, hello. Very nice talk. So, which code have you used?
Geneva code.
The Geneva code.
Yes.
Okay. And okay. And you, so you said you're working with Alexander Hegel as well?
He do the what you call it the mapping for the explosion. I didn't present it here. We have some explosion from this model as well.
Okay. Yeah, we should talk later.
Okay.
Yes, I'm back online. I also had a question.
If you have like such extreme mass loss rates, why mm-hmm. do you never consider them LDV stars? Is there any abundances, or why you don't classify them as LDV?
No, because from our result, we find that it doesn't have any characteristic from for the LVV. But maybe we have to change, I don't know, the LVV, what are the metallicity or something like that. Maybe you already know much better than I do. So because of this, the one that we use, the order prescription, it doesn't show it end up as a LVV.
Now, LBVs are cooler, and they are variable. So that's the big difference. These are not variable. And they're... Well, that was the bisability jump, so those are LBVs. But on the main sequence, they're not.
Okay. Further questions? No?
Yes, these stars evolve so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious to know how can we see them, and Because the process of forming them is still slow, so there must be still a mass reservoir around it, no?
Sorry?
The class zero, usually you have class zero, class one, class two thing.
Mm-hmm, okay.
But if the star starts, I don't remember, class one, I think, if it goes on the main sequence very uh-huh. fast, is the class two finished or?
I don't know.
This
what
is boy, this just shows my my ignorance about
I don't know.
Massive star formation.
Okay.
Tim?
Hi. Okay.
Okay.
So the discovery of gravitational waves from these 30, 40 solar mass black holes, mm-hmm. of course, puts a spotlight on these stars.
Okay.
So from what I've read, the idea is that they don't have a supernova, they just collapse.
Yes.
So do you have anything to say about that, or what the fraction of stars that go supernova might be?
Fraction of supernova goes to the black hole, you mean?
What fraction of these massive stars have a supernova, and what fraction just goes straight to a black hole?
Okay, so I don't have any fraction, but eventually there's paper citing about my work. They say that, for example, if the star around 200 solar mass and greater than that, it will eventually collapse directly to the black hole. So I don't know what are the fraction of numbers, but that is what they have calculated for from the result that I've calculated here.
So maybe directly to that question, for Warfarin stars, which are the presumed supernova or pre-black hole stages of these stars, there's no smoking gun. So there's no known supernova which we know the precursor, and that's a Warfarin. So it's actually one of the biggest debates in this scene, whether Warfarin will undergo a supernova eventually, or if they might all collapse, even not at only at this extreme stage, but only already at, let's say, 30, 40 solar masses. So that's something that's still undecided. We were pretty sure, like, 15 years ago that they will do a supernova, but then all of these supernovas with precursors were found, and no Warfarin are there, so that's why this debate is open up again.
And I wanted to comment on the formation process of these very massive stars. So as far as I know, people think that they don't form the traditional way, but with collisions of lower mass yeah. massive stars. So that's over there.
Okay.
The point is also like we don't observe a 300 solar mass star with at the mass stage of 300.
Yeah.
So the stars that are observed in these massive clusters, especially, for example, the one in the LMC, they have present masses of around 150. Okay, it depends on which of these examples. Okay. But the point is we don't observe them at the start of this thing. And then there's, of course, I mean, it's kind of, we are pretty sure that there might be some of them, but there are not very much of them. So, of course, this is very low number statistics. And if you find that one of these is actually a line of sight effect, it could be a smaller cluster, then this would reduce the stuff a bit. So the debate is not fully settled. We are quite sure that 150 is not the limit, that we have to go higher than that. But where the actual cap is, that's not the last thing. I mean, like 20, 30 years ago, if you looked at this cluster, there were papers claimed that it's one big star with 2,000 solar masses. And of course, we know that's wrong. But now we have better telescopes. We can resolve much more. We still have good reasons to believe that these have higher masses than previously thought, that there is some kind of upper mass limit at 150. But where exactly this mass limit is, that's not finally settled. And the point is really you don't observe the star at the exact initial mass stage. So these stars that we observe are actually all currently in this phase of course that O stars okay. on steroids, mm-hmm. so they have Warfarin type spectra.
This all assumes single star
yes.
evolution, of course.
Yes,
and
of
the binary
course.
Evolution will change the picture, and to answer the questions before, the fraction, how many will go to prompt supernova, how many will not. So it will change things quite a lot. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty about how
yeah.
these stars interact. And even if some of these big stars are actually single stars, I don't know if it's solved. I mean, I heard that, they could be binaries which we don't resolve and so
on. Yeah, I think for the observation that I've showed, the R1316A1 is a single star, but for NG63606, it's a binary. So they managed to deduce either it's binary or single star, yeah.
I'm going to ask the next speaker to come up while we take
yeah,
the last
that was exactly my point. I just want to mention that when you observe a very hypermassive stars, you have to take care of the spatial resolution, and you may have, in fact, multiple stars. That's what was observed with a survey with Pionier recently in 2014, and they show that most of these massive stars are, in fact, multiple stars. So.
Okay, so sorry, I missed it.
It was more a comment, I think.
Okay, all right.
Than a question.
Okay, thank you.